live on your computer anytime you turn it on, which scares me just a little bit. It's the Mike Novak Show, a semi-weekly romp through all things horticultural and environmental, complete with a guy who likes to sing about the earth. Feel free to join in, but be kind to your neighbors. Here we go.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes. And true currents and thriving seas. Wind blowing through breathing trees. Strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Good planets are in the main.
Welcome to the show, and thank you for being with me, whether you're listening on MikeNovak.net or GDGDRadio.com or somewhere else, who knows. For the first part of the show, you're going to like this. I wandered into the backyard of Rick and Deanne Bayless. Now, you might have heard of that Rick Bayless guy. He runs a couple of restaurants in town, like Frontera Grill and Topo Lobampo, and a lot of the produce that shows up in those places is grown in a small backyard in Chicago, actually not too far from where I live, and it's by a guy named Bill Shores. Now, Bill has his own business called Shores Garden Consulting, which you can find at urbanedible.net in case you want to track that down. He's been professionally involved in small-scale intensive gardening and food production since 1993, specializing and space-efficient gardening systems suited to the urban, suburban environment, including container gardens, indoor gardens, raised beds, rooftop gardens, and intensively planted small-space in-ground gardens, all of which utilize season extension, composting, and plant propagation techniques. So, he gave me a private tour of the grounds, though you can go to my website to find out how to get your own tour. Now, that's the first part of the show. To wrap up the show, I talked to a young man named Dusan Coleno, who just graduated in the computer science program of Roosevelt University. But along the way, he found himself in a class called Waste and Consumption in the Sustainability Studies program. So he came up with an app that you can download to your Android smartphone and use to help you keep track of your recycling. I kid you not. He's only 24. I hate him for that. No, I don't. I love him for it. And he's changing the world already. I like that. You can find out about all of the stuff on the show at MikeNovak.net. As always, MikeNovak.net. Let's get rolling, and we will right after this.
Could an app be the answer to a better garden? Absolutely. It's the new free app, Homegrown with Bonnie Plants. Note, track, and photograph your garden's progress. Personalize your weather and reminders. Get variety info, grow guides, hands-free dictation, and more. The Homegrown with Bonnie Plants app, the sharpest tool in your garden. Download it free on the App Store.
I'm still a little bit caught in the glow of having interviewed entomologist and author Doug Tallamy, whose book Bringing Nature Home is changing the way people think about plants and the critters that depend on them. You're going to hear that interview coming up, I believe, in the very next podcast. Now, one of the pieces of advice that Tallamy offers is to plant oak trees because they support so much biodiversity. In Illinois alone, there are 20 native oak species. So why are you planting those foreigners? There's an article in the May issue of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine that can help you do it right, considering that there are pH, moisture, and other considerations in choosing the perfect oak tree for your situation. Writer Deb Terrill gives you some helpful hints on how various oak species will perform and which ones have caught her eye over the years. Then there's my column on the inside back page, as always. Here's a helpful hint for that. Don't read it just before bedtime. Just saying. Chicagoland Gardening Magazine, a publication of state-by-state gardening magazines. Go to chicagolandgardening.com. But if you're in other parts of the Midwest or the South, try one of the 21 magazines in those regions by going to statebystategardening.com or call 888-265-3600, 888-265-3600.
Hi, I'm Peggy, and I've got great news about Natural Awakening Chicago. We're now available throughout the city and suburbs, from Lake County to the Indiana state line. If you own a green business or offer healthy living or wellness products and services, you should be working with our marketing team to get your message out to our targeted audience. Join us, won't you? We're online at nachicagonorth.com or call us today at 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings. Feel good. Live simply. Laugh more.
What you checking?
Oh, I just seeded some stuff the other day, so I was checking the soil moisture for this. So
what is it you just seeded there?
Some kind of salad greens. I can't remember.
Yeah, you'd have to look at them.
I'll know it when I see it. Oh, might have been more of this, actually.
And what is that?
That's a mustard green. That's red rain mustard.
How many times already? We're in the beginning of May. We're like May 8th today. How many times have you harvested from that already?
Been harvested twice.
Uh-huh.
So probably get at least one more harvest from that.
Yeah.
And then most of this stuff's been harvested. That's been harvested once and a half. Half of it was harvested 1 week, and this past week the whole thing was harvested. That Mizuna, big patch.
All right, I got to set the scene here because right next to me is what is soon to become the world-famous 606, right? Is that part
That's
of this?
Right. That's it right there.
And they put fences up so people won't jump into your garden here.
Or sit on the edge and
reach down and try to harvest the stuff that you've got planted here. But they will enjoy the view. Sure. We're in the backyard of world-renowned chef Rick Bayless, and I'm standing to world-renowned gardener Bill Shores, who I have had the pleasure of sitting on a train with for a long journey from Quincy, Illinois, back to Chicago, and talking gardening and all things gardening. And in this yard, which is amazing because it's in the middle of Chicago, and it's not particularly large, but you cram a lot into these spaces and to these beds. What are the sizes of the beds?
Well, there's 11 raised beds. They're each about 3 feet by 13 feet.
Mm-hmm.
And then these beds are about, I'd say, about 35 feet long. Mm. And there's about seven.
Yeah, this is the one behind us. Why are these raised so high behind us?
This is a raised planter bed to take advantage of this southern exposure here.
Mm-hmm.
So we get just a perfect growing environment here with south facing. So this is where I always start the salad greens first.
Because they're going to get the sun in the late winter.
Yeah, stuff just, as you can see, this was planted in March.
All right.
And
it's got covers for it as well.
Yeah, these row covers, these fabric row covers really keep the crops.
And you don't use, it's not protected. A plastic cover, it's a fabric kind of cover.
It's a spun polyester fabric made for growing beds. And it's permeable to air, water, and light. It blocks 15% of the light, but enough gets through 85% that you still get really good growth.
Mm-hmm.
And it protects the plants from wind. It keeps a warmer environment, more humid environment. It limits sort of drying out of the soil. So it really speeds up the growth, especially in spring. And fall is when we primarily use it. And then if you get kind of residues coming out of the sky, like from those cottonwood trees down there, which can be like snow.
It protects them from that, huh?
It's snow that germinates in the soil.
Ah.
And it also messes up salad greens. This is for restaurants, so it's going to be very clean. Well, it's going to be clean for any use if you're going to eat it. But it protects it from that. If you're unlucky enough to have rabbit activity, it can protect the crops from that too. And so pest control, very multifunctional.
What kind of pests do you see here?
Not too many now. We have feral cats that they live outside year-round, and they come and feed every night. We feed them. They have shelters. I don't know if they live here. But their scent just drives away rats, mice, and rabbits, which were the primary pests in this garden. Mammalian pests. So there's still insects. They don't help with that.
It's hard to explain to folks. You're working for Rick Bayless. You don't have just this yard with all these beds here. There's a greenhouse I'm looking up at right here. And you mentioned some of the other spaces. You've got a rooftop garden. What else do you have? Do you have to take
care of?
There's
a deck garden there. We're going to put up stair-step planters that I designed and had built, metal planters, where I'll have chili peppers going up about the height of that door up there. So we're really going to max out production up there. We have a 1,000 square foot rooftop garden above Rick's restaurant in River North, Topolo Bampo, that I
managed. Which just won an award, didn't it?
Yeah, as far as I know, I guess. I don't know. I've been in the garden. What kind of? You think I know what's going on?
Don't they come out here and tell
world?
You that? No.
I don't know. Probably.
I thought the gardener always knew everything. So you got the 1,000 square foot rooftop, and then what else? Anything else?
Street side ornamental plantings in front of Shoko One, Shoko Dos, and Frontera Grill.
Now, how do you decide which of these plants go into which restaurant? Is it very specific, or is it kind of catch as catch can?
Well, we primarily grow for Topolo Bampo because that restaurant is sized. Just the amount of food that's used really matches the amount of salad greens and herbs that we can produce. But many of the crops were supply Frontera Grill and Shoko One as well. So the chefs kind of work out how to do that, but I work with them to, you know, work out a cropping system, and they'll know. It's pretty steady, the production from week to week, and I'll, you know, send them emails so they know when things are going to start, when crops will start. But we have a pretty good system down that we've developed. You know, I've been working with Rick now. This is my 10th year. So we have a pretty good system going, especially for the salad greens and herbs and things that are used all the time, the microgreens as well.
So in terms of the greens that Rick Bayless uses in his restaurants, what percentage are grown by you, would you say? Is it a tiny percentage? And if so, what is the point of it? What do they add to the menu that he can't get otherwise?
Well, for Topolo Bampo, during the growing season, or outdoor growing season, we grow indoors 12 months of the year, and then outdoors we grow from April through November, typically. So during that period, we're supplying just about 100% of the salad greens for Topolo Bampo, and then at times salad greens for some of the other restaurants as well. There's certain herbs that we're the only supplier of, especially this Hoja Santa, this Mexican herb.
Where's that?
I'll show you some here. We're going to walk over there.
Yeah, why not?
You see, these plants are in the same family as black pepper, the plants that produce the peppercorns that we use for the condiment. Same family. The leaves are used for their fragrant, tastiness.
Tastiness.
So it has sort of anise flavor. Some people call it root beer plant.
Although it's kind of
sarsaparilla.
Lemony, too, right? Mm-hmm. Or something like that. It's got that sort of flavor in it. Now, you have it in the greenhouse
so
here.
This is about a quarter of the number of plants that we grow. So the rest are still upstairs. We grow a lot of this, but it's great. It grows in containers, and we can grow it in shade or in sun.
Doesn't matter?
No, it grows in shade just as well as it grows in sun, which is ideal for a crop in an urban garden because there's so many shady spaces around the house and everything. So we produce a lot of this. Last year, production keeps going up. I produced 70 pounds of leaves, and there's about 70 leaves make a pound. So we produce a lot of leaves, and you can see some of these get really large. They can get to 12 inches.
You're talking about the individual leaves.
The individual leaf, that's 1 square foot. That's a lot of leaf.
And what dishes use this?
All kinds of dishes. They make you can use this as a wrap. mm-hmm. around foods, around tamales really? Or fish, and it'll impart its flavor to the food.
Do you dry it out first or something, or do you use it green, fresh?
They use it fresh, but they'll freeze it in the winter, too, and we produce it in the winter, but they'll freeze it just to have, stockpile it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen Rick make tacos where it's sort of like put into a taco, soft taco, and then sort of steamed inside the wow. taco. So it's an ingredient inside the taco. I've seen they made like sort of omelets and egg dishes. They made a Hoja Santa mojito cocktail one time when I was here. They were at a party at the house.
Just because you've got this, and give me the name of the plant again so folks who want to try
sure.
this.
Hoja Santa, Hoja Santa, just like Santa Claus. It means sacred leaf or holy leaf.
Interesting.
In
See, I'm not familiar with it, but it is obviously a tropical. You've got to keep it enclosed.
Right. Yeah, it's got to be inside
during the
winter.
Yeah.
This takes up about 50% of the greenhouse, or maybe 75. Literally, it's a huge. They can't get enough of this.
But we're not giving away a trade secret here, are we? Because, as you said, this is the plant that's unusual that is added to the dishes at the restaurants.
I encourage everybody to grow it.
So you've got
on the grill.
That you've and the
worm bins here, worm composting.
Oh, the worm composting.
Yeah, let me show you one down here.
Okay. A little happier with the one down here.
I'm not going to get into it. It's a long issue. I've been raising worms for almost 20 years.
What have you learned? What's the secret?
Do it outside. Not in the house. Don't do it in the house. So, they're there.
Yeah, oh my goodness. There they are. Now, do you... Have you got holes in the bottom of this?
Yeah, there's
a hole
in the bottom. It drains out. You can see water.
That's another reason you do it outside, right?
Yeah, it's just less messy. You don't have to worry about all the insects and the nets.
You know, the vermicomposters, the house vermi, they would argue with you. They would say, "Oh no, everybody can. You can do it inside."
Yeah, you can do it. I'm just saying you shouldn't. Of course you can. I have one inside, just a little demonstration one I use.
So how many of these bins do you have out here?
Well, these are just temporary bins. I use these wooden bins because, I do it year-round outside, so they do need a little protection in the winter.
Uh-huh.
This being Chicago and all that. So these are the bins I use. They're, the compost in there is virtually finished, so I'm just finishing it off, and I'm going to harvest this compost, and I'm going to move these bins back into their summer location right in that gangway there where it's shady for the summer. So they'll be there. In the winter, they like it here because they'll get the sun. And I insulate these bins with just a little insulation board on the inside. And the worms are happy all winter long. They stay totally happy. And
now,
I feed them, and they're active, and they're producing compost. So I get two harvests a year of compost, one in the spring and one in the fall, for a total of about 600 pounds of compost a year out of these two bins.
My goodness, and how much of it do you add to each bed? Do you have a formula for that at all?
Like
a couple inches of top layer or something?
Well, what I do with the salad beds is each one of these raised beds that's about 3 feet by 13 feet will get about 100 pounds, but I'll put in that yard waste compost over there. That one produces about... 1,500 pounds of compost a year. That's all yard waste, no food waste in there. All the yard waste from all these gardens that you see, the rooftop garden and the planter boxes of downtown, all that stuff goes in there. So they'll get 100 pounds. And then between each succession planting of salad greens in those beds, all summer long we're planting maybe 5-6 plantings, 7 even crops of salad greens. In between each one of those succession plantings, we'll just sprinkle on some compost, so they're getting compost between each succession planting. That makes sense?
Yeah, and it keeps the soil charged and healthy. And do you keep the covers on all summer?
No, just when that cottonwood fluff is coming
is
down.
Doing its
after
thing.
That, no, because visually, it's okay in the spring and fall once we start doing tours and parties. They want to see the garden.
Right.
And it doesn't need it, you know. It's
And that's another thing. You do tours of this garden about once a week.
Yep.
I don't know how you find the time with all you're doing here and as many gardens as you're taking care of.
Trying to weather the housing market? Consider replacing your windows and siding. Remodeling Magazine says they're some of the nation's most popular projects today.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for all your remodeling and energy needs. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Captain's log, stardate 42326.1. The Enterprise is under attack by an apparently hostile life form. Mr. Worf, status report.
Inexplicable, Captain. They appear to be perambulating vegetables. We are being stalked by stalks of asparagus.
That is incorrect, Mr. Worf. Asparagus officinalis, or killer asparagus, was the subject of a very popular 21st century tome by the brilliant author Mike Novak.
Mike Novak. I'm familiar with his work.
Mike Novak was one of the smartest, funniest people in the horticultural world of the 21st century.
Sound red alert. Shields up. Tell me more, Mr. Data.
He has been variously compared to Mark Twain, Dave Barry, and Edgar Allan Poe.
Edgar Allan Poe, author of my favorite children's stories.
Captain, I am attempting to access a copy of the masterpiece. It seems to be available online at aroundtheblockpress.com.
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 Yes, Mr. Watt.
Yes, Captain. Aroundtheblockpress.com.
How many times can I say it?
And now back to the tour of Rick Bayless's gardens and my conversation with horticulturist Bill Shores.
Oh, what did you just expose here? What do we got?
Sorry, this is Italian flatleaf parsley.
Yeah.
So another herb we grow for the restaurant. So again, this is a bed that's shady until 1 in the afternoon, and then it gets sun all afternoon. So that and the garlic chives, they don't need full sun. So full sun is in short supply in a lot of urban gardens.
Like
so.
This one. You've got yeah. issues here. Although
I do have issues.
You don't have...
Yeah, I have
you're
issues
fortunate.
In general. But.
But at least you don't have any trees right here on the west and... Set
no,
immediately,
but
you got over
shading from this structure in the late late summer to fall and winter. So
right.
about half of this bed here, you split it right. These raised beds, about halfway is shade all winter. Yeah. This one's this side by the arbor is a little bit more sun, but down there, so that really limits you know winter production because people are like, well, why don't you put up a hoop house or something on there? It's not worth it.
And that's why
it's shaded. It's not worth right. trying to grow crops in the winter.
And that's why, as you pointed out at the very beginning of our conversation, on the north side of the yard, you right. have that raised bed so it can catch mm-hmm. as much of that southern sun as possible.
Yeah, so that's my overwintering area. So I actually did overwinter some spinach, mm-hmm. planted it in the fall, and that's what with that bare patch that I just seeded there, that was in spinach. I was harvesting it since March.
And I assume this is all organic.
All organic. Yes, all organic methods.
What do you do when you have a health issue with your plants, whether it's insects or pathogens?
Well, we will do different pest control techniques, pest and disease control techniques. You know, there's cultural controls, which is trying to create the right environment for a plant. So say with fungal diseases, trying to have good airflow. So say with the squash leaves, we trim off dead leaves. It makes the plant look better and also opens up the plant to airflow. And then you know, at certain, like late summer, the powdery mildew will just take off
right.
just because
yeah.
it's growing everywhere. So we'll use a copper fungicide, an organically approved copper fungicide, once a week for that. And then also in the spring, I'll treat the roots with a mycorrhizal fungi blend to inoculate the roots with this beneficial fungi that actually grows in association with the roots and helps the plant to take up more nutrients and can help just fight diseases as well.
We're talking to Bill Shores, by the way. If you've been listening to this and you wonder where this is happening, in the backyard of Chicago chef Rick Bayless. Bill, you have your own outfit.
My own business, yes. Shores Garden Consulting, informally now known as Urban Edible.
Why
less
important?
Of a mouthful than
I've seen
Shores
the website.
Garden Consulting.
Yeah, Urban Edible.
It's a little catchier.
But you mentioned squash, and so what we're seeing here, because we're in May.
Yeah, we're seeing the squash.
We're seeing the early plants, obviously. Right.
They'll go up there, yep.
So what else will you be growing in the summer?
We'll have a lot more edible flowers, nasturtiums trailing off that raised planter bed there. We'll have edible marigolds growing there. We'll have Chinese long beans. What else will we have in here? More salad greens, more herbs. We've got mint. You want to see the mint? We do a lot of herbs.
I hope it's not in the ground.
It's not anymore. It's in the ground in the winter. Not a problem in the ground in the winter.
Yeah, no.
Spread. So I have a program. See this beautiful bed here?
Yeah.
So this is what I call a perennial annual bed. So it's got just starting to add some annuals in here. And I've got some perennials growing in there.
And got some elephant ears.
Some tropicals that I just put in. So that's going to overwinter in the basement. So that's pretty easy to do. So this bed, I'll grow a lot of coleus in here, make this really colorful. You know, this is an entertaining area. Well, this bed in the winter is a storage area for plants, for hardy perennial plants. So this is where I store all the mint plants in the winter. And then I store many other types of plants that are used in ornamental containers such as hosta and ferns and other plants such as that. So because I have the space in here in the winter because the annuals are gone. So in the spring, instead of having to go out and buying all these plants, I'll just go and take them out of the ground and put them in their pots. So let me show you where the mints go. Or where they're going, different places. Here's some kind of ornamental edible planters here with a beautiful blue pot. And this is a citrus mint. So this one will provide beauty and also provide mint for the restaurant. This is one of the ferns that overwintered in that bed. It's going to go into a better pot, but that's an example of that system I was talking about.
Uh-huh.
Here's where most of the mints are grown. Here, so
and it's
grown.
A little shed-like area, open, kind of open.
This is what I call a protected structure.
Uh-huh.
This is really handy. See how I have a nice place here for the seedlings?
I like
protected
this.
Protected from wind. Also see the filtered light here from this polycarbonate panel here.
Mm-hmm.
This filters the light in a really good way so I can grow microgreens here in the summer. I recommend that everyone have a protected space. And then in the winter, I can store all this delicate containers here with the clay and glazed terracotta containers. Then you don't want those to get wet and have freezing and thawing in the winter. They'll crack. So this keeps them dry all winter. And the compost bin. And then the mint production in the summer. You talk about a lot of production in one area. This is a really multi-purpose area.
And it's only, 5 feet wide or something, or 6 feet wide, and what,
it's 20 feet long.
It's about 20 feet long. And except for the translucent roof here, it's actually pretty open. I mean, you do have boards back here, but they're not...
Yeah, it's got a fence on one side, then sort of a low trellis fence on the other.
Yeah.
So it's protected. It's sort of like a, sort of a, you know... Not a greenhouse, but sort of halfway towards a greenhouse. It's a halfway house for plants.
Okay.
Does that sound good?
Yeah, it does.
The mint likes it. The mint really likes this dappled sun here. I mean, look at this growth.
It's beautiful.
These
it's just
taken
gorgeous.
Out of the ground like, I think, 2.5 weeks.
So you took them out of that bed you just showed us.
2 weeks? I think it was 2 weeks ago.
And you're not
ago.
Worried about a few of the roots remaining and then running rampant in that bed?
No, it's like a solid disc. If you take it out, that root ball is almost like a cake, but
because
not as thick,
because it's in the pot most of the year, and
it has that round shape, so it's really easy to dig them out. I'll mark everything so I know which one is which, because I have to keep track of my different types of mint: spearmint, peppermint, citrus mint, mojito mint.
And I notice I see you got some raspberries over there too.
Yes, this is a very, very space efficient raspberry patch.
Well,
you know, it's doesn't take
it has
a
to
lot
be. You don't have a lot of room in this yard.
Yeah, everything has to be kind of squeezed into a small space. We get a lot of productions, not just food production. You know, Rick's cooking here, producing the TV show here, and entertaining, and tours, and catered dinners.
I was wondering how you knew where the microphone was. I forgot you do the TV show. You're like, you guys have done this so many times.
Right.
But I should mention that the raspberry patch, for those of you who have raspberries that run wild over your yard, this is what? Okay, again, like 5 by 3?
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah, it's very space-efficient. I made a bamboo structure, custom-made.
So they grow up on the bamboo?
Yeah, well, it just containerizes
them. 6 feet tall. Yeah.
I use some Velcro ties to keep them in bounds. But this produces really well.
Really?
This one gets, you know, I prune it so that it gets a summer crop on last year's growth. See, there's last year's growth here.
Mm-hmm.
And see, that's new production from last year's growth. That'll make a summer crop. That's usually smaller. But then it'll make a fall crop on the first year growth, which you can see, you might be able to see some now, some little shoots coming directly out of the ground.
Yeah, I see one right there.
Yeah, so that's going to make the fall crop. And by that time, the first crop, the plants are about this high. The second one, they're about up to here. And that's the one that really cranks out some fruit.
I'll be darned.
That second planting. So
I wouldn't think that you would get that much fruit out of such a small area.
Yeah, it's pretty productive. You know, there's some variations from year to year. Last year, we had an amazing year. It was just really productive.
It was a good summer for that. I also noticed that prickly pear cactus.
Yeah, this is a perennial prickly pear cactus.
Do you use it for the restaurant?
Growing wild. Yeah, we do. Rick wanted it for these edible fruits. Those are the ones from last year.
Mm-hmm.
But these are called tunas, I guess they call them. It's not a tuna fish, but it's...
But it's a little growth that comes out of the
cactus leaf. It's a little
cactus leaf.
Yeah, well, it flowers. This produces beautiful flowers, just lovely. I don't know if you've ever seen them.
I'm not sure I have.
Bigger. Yeah. It's about an inch and a half in diameter. Beautiful yellow flowers. You can find this plant growing wild. I've seen it down in Indiana Dunes and up at Illinois Beach State Park. This grows wild in many of the states in the U.S.,
And I noticed that it's part of a patch that seems to be your herb patch here.
This is the herb garden.
The herb garden, again.
The real herb.
And you've got to understand, it's not that big. It's this small little area. Now I want to say maybe 10 by 6, something like that.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But you've got, rosemary in here and...
Yeah, the rosemary, which is a... You know, kind of looks like it's planted, but it's in a pot.
I noticed that. The pot is still in the ground. What's that all about?
That's about making you think it's in the ground.
It's like being
illusion.
It's like being at the flower show, right? It's not really planted. It's just in a pot.
Yeah, and then this is thyme, various thyme plants. This is lavender for the flower production. And then all these thymes are used for flower production. So we harvest the thyme flowers, and then we've got winter savory here, which is used for its leaf.
Mm-hmm.
Common chives. The garlic chives likes it cooler and moister. So this is for the herbs that like it hot and dry. And then we've got, this is called mentuchia, and it's related to the mints. It's in the mint family.
Mm-hmm.
And it's similar to pennyroyal. I'll let you smell it and you figure out.
I like it, whatever it is. Kind of hard to figure out.
Yeah, it's kind of an unusual herb. And then this is a dianthus for edible flowers. This is a new type I'm growing and has red flowers. We do have other dianthus over there by the parsley that I didn't point out. Also edible flowers on these chives.
Mm-hmm.
And then what else do we have in here?
Do you have any trouble?
Plant some more stuff in here.
Okay.
It's not totally planted.
The lavender, do you have trouble keeping it alive? Some varieties in Chicago don't do so well.
Yeah, I think what might be the problem with that is maybe people have it in soil. It's too damp.
Mm-hmm.
If you see this soil here, see how it's very gravelly?
Right.
I've added sand and gravel, and I've made it just really light. I'm trying to mimic this plant's natural environment, which is a dry, rocky Mediterranean hillside. Okay, so I don't add fertilizer.
Not here in Windy City.
Excuse me. I don't irrigate that. I'll just water if it gets extremely dry. I do irrigate these plants over here, but those ones keep it dry.
And you should notice that the lavender is right next to the prickly pear cactus. So
that likes it dry, too.
Yeah, they like, yeah. Of course, yeah.
They have similar requirements. Yeah, see, they get along, see?
Uh-huh.
They're companion plants.
not your typical like companion other. Plants, I would think, yeah. let me ask you about that, because you do have some flowers here, and I imagine you want to attract pollinators.
Sure.
What do you have any plants in here in particular that are pollinator attractors?
Pollinator attractors, the squash definitely attracts pollinators. You know, we're growing the squash primarily for its squash blossoms, but we also do produce fruits as well. What else? Oh, right. So here you can see they're starting to come up. See the dill there?
Yeah.
Under planted under the raspberry. That's very beautiful, and those flowers attract all kinds of beneficial insects. It'll just be just buzzing with activity.
So does that grow right through the raspberry or just in front
of it? No, it just comes right in front, and then this beautiful golden flower clusters there.
Yeah.
Amazing. And just that really attracts.
You must get some swallowtails, too, on the dill.
Yeah, we get all kinds of native bees, and there's a lot of plants in that native garden there that attract beneficials as well. And then note too, please, the grapes on top of the arbor.
I did notice that earlier when we got here. You've got some wisteria, you've got some grapes.
Also very productive last year. A lot
the
of
grapes?
Production.
What kind of grapes are they?
Concord grapes.
I didn't think they did that well here.
I think it's a Concord grape. I didn't plant it, so I can't guarantee it, but I was told that's what it is. The other one that you really have to keep an eye on is that Virginia creeper.
Yes.
Don't let that.
Yes, I have some of that in my yard, which is taking over as well. You have to be careful.
The grapes will take over, too. All these vines are very aggressive.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I think we've covered most everything here. You've even got ornamentals like Creeping Jenny, and I'm blanking on the...
This is a juga.
A juga, thank you very much.
I dug that out of my parents' yard.
And it's everywhere here now.
It's beautiful. Look at the flowers on that.
Yeah.
It's a semi-evergreen, so it keeps its leaves through much of the winter, as will this one in a milder winter. And then our bulb display is kind of where we had some dwarf daffodils here.
Right.
And the scilla bulbs are still out. And then I just put in some lobelia there. And then we're going to put some profusion zinnias in here. So we'll have more floral.
What I love about it is that you make the transition. One thing.
It's a transition, exactly.
Yeah, yeah, one thing disappears and you fill it in with something else.
Oh. Yeah. And it transitions, too, from the food portion to the ornamental.
This is great. Well,
so you don't get too shocked when you cross that line.
I don't think anybody's going to be shocked. The shock and awe here is of the beauty and the economy of what you've done and how much you've managed to put in a very small space. And so, Bill Shores, again, give us the website if folks want to track you down.
UrbanEdible.net.
He's a busy guy. You'll be hard pressed to get a hold of him. Thank you very
you
much,
get a
Bill.
Hold of me.
Okay.
Could an app be the answer to a better garden? Absolutely. It's the new free app, Homegrown with Bonnie Plants. Note, track, and photograph your garden's progress. Personalize your weather and reminders. Get variety info, grow guides, hands-free dictation, and more. The Homegrown with Bonnie Plants app, the sharpest tool in your garden. Download it free on the App Store.
You can have a beautiful landscape and be kind to the environment for great growing results. I suggest you try Milorganite Organic Nitrogen Fertilizer. Milorganite's slow-release formula provides nitrogen and other nutrients over an 8 to 10-week period for even growth and better root development. Because grass is able to use these nutrients over a longer period of time, less fertilizer is wasted by seeping into the groundwater or running off into streams. Milorganite contains contains 85% organic matter, which promotes beneficial microbial activity and improves the soil's ability to grow and nurture grass and plants. Because it doesn't leach, it is ideal for sandy soils. Milorganite for better results naturally. Visit milorganite.com to find a garden center near you. Well, I'm always on the lookout for people who are changing the planet in good ways. A couple of weeks ago, I had Ashley Williams on the program, and she's a student who's coming to Loyola University in the fall, Loyola University in Chicago, to be in the Environmental Studies program at Loyola. And now I've run into another person who's impressed me, and his name is Dusan Coleno. And Dusan, welcome. How are you?
Hey, I'm good. Hi.
Hi. And I found out about you because I have a connection at Roosevelt University. My buddy Mike Bryson is one of the co-founders of the Sustainability Studies program at Loyola. He and I, you don't know this, but he and I used to play softball way back in the day. He is doing wonderful things at Roosevelt. And one of the things he's done is bring in students like you. And I understand you're an honor student. You're about to graduate.
Yeah, I just graduated.
You just graduated. Well, congratulations.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
And the reason that I'm talking to you today is because you came up with an app for recycling.
Mm-hmm.
Before we get into the specifics of it, because I downloaded it. It's on my phone here. So I'm going to have you walk me through it, because I want more people to know about this. But what gave you the idea to do this, Dusan?
Well, I was taking the class with Professor Bryson, and as a part of this class, we were doing a waste audit of one of the university buildings.
A waste audit, okay, yeah.
And so it was a long work to categorize everything, so I figured out if there would be an application to do that, to categorize recycling even before you put it into the trash.
Uh-huh.
Then you can do it much faster on your own without doing it afterwards.
Uh-huh. Now, how were you doing it? How were you doing the audit in the first place? Were you writing things down in a chart or what?
Well, we took the bags from trash. We put everything out, sorted each item we found.
Mm-hmm.
And then each category was weighted, so we knew the weight of glass, plastics, and everything. And then we also categorized how many items were recyclable, how many items could be composted, how many items had to be transferred to landfills.
Mm-hmm.
We are doing it all afterwards, after the trash was collected.
Uh-huh. And you wanted to set up something that would help you do this a little easier.
Yes. During you don't need to do it afterwards. You can do it during the process of throwing away some items.
Uh-huh. Now, you obviously, you're not just an environmentalist. You must have some knowledge about technical issues.
Yeah, I'm a computer science major, so I kind of connect these two areas, computer science and recycling, because I really like the class.
You like the class, the environmental class?
Yeah, I like it was called about waste and consumption.
Yeah.
And I like the class, and since I knew that I was planning to take Android application development in the next semester, so it kind of came together, everything, the class about the waste, the class about Android application development, and I figured out I could do such applications for my project.
So does this mean if somebody has an iPhone, they can't use this app?
Unfortunately, for right now, no. It's only for Android.
But you know, that's interesting, because a couple of weeks ago I was talking to somebody on the show who had an application only for iPhone, and I couldn't use it because I have an Android. So now the shoe is on the other foot.
Yeah.
So you folks with Androids can use this recycling app, and of course Dusan is going to create the iPhone app soon, right?
Well, I'm planning to. Yeah, it's kind of it's not as easy to publish application for iPhone as for Android.
Really?
So it takes more time, but that's my plans for future.
Well, I hope you get that done. All right. So, by the way, how long did it take you to develop this app?
From the beginning to end, it was whole semester. So around from end of January until April 26th. So, 3 months.
Wow. All of 3 months. Well, that's not something I'm going to do in 3 months. I can tell you that. All right. So, I downloaded the app, and if folks want to find it on the PlayStation, they look for Recycle Tracker, correct?
Yes.
So look for Recycle Tracker, and I did, and now I've got it in front of me. And the question, though, is I wanted to use it right away, and because it what it does, it creates different charts and graphs to help people understand how much they're recycling.
Yes, that's correct. So it takes amount of each category, each waste that people have tracked in the past, and then it shows them which category they're recycling the most, how much energy they saved by recycling, and everything is calculated according to their statistics, according to their recycling.
All right, so I have this in front of me, and I've loaded it, and I opened it on my smartphone. And it says, how do I want to start with this? The page I've got, it says Recycle Tracker. It's pretty simple, actually.
Yeah.
It says Recycle Tracker, you have saved 0 trees, because I haven't used it yet. You have saved 0 kilowatts of energy. Okay, yeah. I get it. But then below that it says scan barcode, or you can hit scan barcode or throw it away.
Yeah. So these two buttons are for kind of the same thing. Many items that people can recycle have barcodes, like yogurt containers. So there is a function when you can hit the scan barcode button.
All right, I just did. I hit the scan barcode, and I've got an item in front of me, which is actually a milk carton that I was throwing away.
There.
What?
You can scan the barcode of the...
Yeah, I'm letting it... Okay, let's get it to focus here. There it goes. And it scanned it very nicely, looking for the product. Unfortunately, Recycle Tracker has stopped. Okay. Let's try that again. Okay. I'm going to rescan. Here we go. Okay. There's the barcode. All right. This time it worked. I don't know why it stopped before. All right. Okay. Now, it gives me a chart to fill out. And the name, what am I putting in there? Whatever this product is?
Yeah, you can put whatever you will, whatever is convenient for you. Like if you are recycling something that you are recycling every day, you can put milk I'm drinking every day, or just milk container.
Well, this one is not, we don't buy this usually every day. It's Trader Joe's organic 2% reduced fat milk. All right, so I'll put Trader Joe's organic milk.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so I'm putting that in there. I've now typed that in. It gives me the barcode number. Now, here's the category. It says weight. I have to weigh this myself, right?
Yes.
There's the drawback, huh?
Yeah, there's hardly any way to find the weight of material that is used for container.
Right, because the manufacturer is going to tell you how much is in here. For instance, in this one, it's 1.89 liters, but the manufacturer is not going to tell you what it weighs when you take the milk out of the container, right?
Yes, that's right.
And that's the problem. So I need to get a scale, don't I?
Yep.
All right, and one of those little scales, and then which I'm going to do. Okay, I'm going to cheat and say it's 3 ounces. Okay, I'm just gonna make that up. And category. Then there's a category. It says glass, metals, paper, plastics, other. What would you put this under? Paper.
Traditionally, the milk is in the plastics bottles. I don't know if this is a plastic bottle or.
No. It's a carton with. You know, one of those waxed cartons, which they don't really use wax on anymore. They use plastic.
Oh, yeah.
So I should be able to recycle this. So, but what do you call? You don't have a category for this,
yes,
do you?
There is no category, and I don't know whether it is recyclable to like regular recycling services.
Well, they tell in Chicago, they're telling us that there's a whole campaign to get people to recycle this. These kinds of containers.
In any case, you can use the other category if there's.
Yeah, so let's do that. Let's use the other category at the moment. So I'm going to do that, and we'll get back to this. And it's always a good question for folks. So I'm hitting save. All right, and now it's lined up in my frequent items. It now says Trader Joe's organic milk. So if I had another one just like that, and the next time I came to. Weigh it or to throw it into the recycling bin, that would pop up. And what would I do? I would just tap on that?
Yeah, you can either tap on the frequent item.
Yeah.
And if it's not in the list of frequent items, you can, again, use the scan barcode button. But in this time, you don't need to go through the process of filling up the information. The application will scan the barcode, recognize the item, and automatically add it to statistics.
And when I tap on the Trader Joe's organic milk, it says, voila, you recycled another item.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. Every time I tap on it, is it telling me that I'm recycling it?
Yeah, it's adding into statistics. So.
Well, okay, where's it adding it into?
Well, if you click on the top part of the screen, where
yes.
It says you have saved 0 trees. It will show details of your statistics.
Okay, I've got statistics. Oh, there's the other, and it's shown up, and it covers the whole ball because that's all I've got at the moment.
Yeah.
And you have saved the kilowatts of energy. Does all of my kilowatt? It doesn't actually have numbers attached to it yet.
Yeah, because the thing is, it's categorized as other. So it will show up in the charts, but the application doesn't know how much energy it's saved from the other category because there is no formula for.
So if I went back and I called this paper, that might change it, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Which means I'd have to re-scan it.
You can go to throw it away, the other button.
The which, oh, throw it away, okay. Oh, and then I can throw that away?
Mm-hmm. It is the same as the list of frequent items, but the list of the frequent items only contains 5 most frequent items that
we recycle.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. What if I want to delete the Trader Joe's organic milk?
You can do so-called long click. If you press and hold on the name of the item.
Yes.
The application will show a dialog with 2 options, edit and delete, and you can delete it that way. So just press and hold the name of Trader Joe's.
Let's see here. There it is. I'm going to delete. Are you sure you want to delete? Yes. But you have to go to throw it away. So this throw it away button is... I'm not exactly sure what you mean when you say throw it away. Does that mean that you're not recycling it?
Well, everything there is only for recycling. So Yeah, it sounds kind of like you are throwing it away to landfill.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's also recycling.
Okay. Maybe you ought to make that a little clearer. At any rate, so I'm going to start doing this, and I'm going to see how this adds up, and I want to keep track of my recycling because I do a lot of this. We're talking to honor student Dusan Kaleno, who just graduated from computer science at Roosevelt University. He took the sustainability studies course called Waste and Consumption, came up with this app for recycling, which you can download onto your Android if you look up Recycle Tracker in the Play Store, and it's there, and I'm going to start using it. What's your next app going to be, Dusan?
Well, for now, I would like to focus more on this application because there are still a lot of things that I would like to improve for the future, and also find all the bugs, all the errors that are there and fix them.
Yeah. So you're going to tweak this. You still have to tweak this application a little bit.
Yeah, there are, I have a few ideas that I want to incorporate in the future, and also like throw it away a button. So it needs kind of better wordings in some places.
Right, like the throw it away. I think that's confusing because it looks like you're throwing it in the trash. So maybe that's a different wording you might want to use.
Yeah.
And of course, the other thing I didn't mention, how old are you, Dusan?
24.
You know, that's the same age as Ashley Williams, who I had on the show a few weeks ago, and she's doing remarkable stuff. So are you, and I'm really, really happy to talk to folks like you who are the future of environmentalism in the United States and the world. So if you got an Android, I want you downloading Recycle Tracker right away and start using it. Dusan, it was great talking to you. Thank you so much, and good luck to you. I'm glad Mike Bryson found you there, and I'm glad he told me about this. I hope we talk again real soon, Dusan.
Oh, that would be nice. Thank you for having me on the show.
No problem. And with that, I'm out of here. Go green or go home. You can find more information about the Mike Novak Show at mikenovak.net. That's MikeNowak.net for links, photos, and commentary.